The London Underground is one of the greatest public transport system achievements in the world. But did you know that allegedly it is also haunted? Panicked passengers have reported seeing the spirit of an undead Egyptian princess dressed in nothing more than a loincloth and a headdress, wailing and screaming.
The deep underground tunnels are a perfect place for spirits to lurk, ready to spook unsuspecting commuters. From phantom hitchhikers to distressed women looking for lost children, to the screams of people killed during air raid shelter attacks, the London Underground is not a place for the faint of heart or the supersensitive. Join us on this week's episode as we explore the tunnels and abandoned stations of the London Underground.
Welcome to this week's episode of True Hauntings. I'm Anne Rekovich.
And I'm Renata Daniel.
Hope you enjoy the show.
Anne and Renata have been investigating paranormal occurrences for the past 20 years. They have been at the center of various unexplained phenomena and have witnessed countless ghostly experiences. The duo now turn to high-profile cases that have attracted the eyes of the world. Between the dimensions we see and the dimensions we don't, supernatural forces are at play. Evil lurks within the shadows of our homes and in the darkest corners of our minds. It follows us like a shadow, forever. This is where nightmares become reality. This is True Hauntings.
Let's get on with it.
Let's get on with it. Bethnal Green Station holds a reputation as being the scene of the worst civilian disaster of World War II, as well as being the largest loss of life in a single incident on the London Underground. During the war, it was used as an air raid shelter. The East End of London had experienced heavy bombing raids during the war, but on 3rd of March 1943, 173 people, 27 men, 84 women, and 62 children were killed and 92 were injured in a crush whilst attempting to enter the safety of the station. 2 days before this, Britain had bombed Berlin, and of course, that brought about retaliation. On the 3rd of March at 8:17 p.m., the siren sounded. Hundreds of terrified people ran through the darkened streets to Bethnal Green Tube Station, where some 500 people were already sheltering. Within minutes, 1,500 people had entered the shelter. 10 minutes later, loud noises outside panicked those who were trying to enter the station, causing pushing, shoving, and then a huge surge forward. Adding to the panic was the narrow entrance to the station, a dimly lit staircase and wetness caused by rain during the day. As a woman near the bottom of the staircase slipped, others fell over. And within seconds, over 300 men, women, and children were crushed in the tiny stairwell. People were terrified and panicking as they fell over, with many more trying to push their way into the shelter. The rescuers found it almost impossible to help. People who witnessed the horror said there were people screaming and hollering as they piled up like sardines. As the residents of Bethnal Green were used to these noises, these loud bangs, the sounds of bombs being dropped, why did this particular incident cause a panic? What they actually had heard was a salvo of rockets fired a quarter of a mile away at Victoria Park by an experimental new weapon. The local population had not been informed because of security regulations. Eyewitnesses describe the sky being lit up and the sound being terrifying. The Ministry of Defence confirmed that rockets were fired in Victoria Park, but rejected the view that this caused the disaster. They claimed that the crush in the station was the result of sirens signalling a Luftwaffe attack. However, no one claimed they heard any planes. Coping with the crushed bodies was a truly dreadful and traumatic experience. Many babies and children that were brought out had turned blue. They were taken to the mortuary at Whitechapel on carts and buses. In nearly all cases, death was due to asphyxiation, with virtually all dying within 10 to 15 seconds of being crushed. Years after the disaster, there were reports of noises similar to those of women and children screaming. In 1981, a station foreman was working late at Bethnal Green Station. He had seen to the usual tasks of securing the station and doing the paperwork when he heard the low sound of voices. As he stopped what he was doing, the sound became more and more distinct. It was the noise of children crying, but it gradually grew louder and was then joined by the sound of women screaming. This went on for some 10 to 15 minutes until, overcome with fear, he left his office. Today, above the station is a small commemorative plaque which was placed there in 1993 to the victims of this disaster, although there is a general feeling that it is inadequate for what those poor souls suffered. Wasn't that a sad story, Renata?
Oh, that's just awful.
Now, I got that one today from The Haunted London Underground. I adapted it, and that was by David Brandon. And that book is chock-a-block full of various stations and ghost stories. It was amazing.
I had no idea that there were so many ghost stories associated with the London Underground, but it's not hard to understand why.
Yeah, I remember when I suggested it to you, looked at me and went, what? The Underground? And what made me think of is that I had seen something on Facebook, I think it was, a picture where they had posted up something about the ghosts of the London Underground, and that's what made me look into it a little bit further. I went,
yes. So this was quite an interesting deep dive, I can say that, into the Underground. And if you think of it at the time, because we're going back to the 1800s when all of this was envisaged in the first place, the people that did throw the idea out there and say, let's build an underground. Can you imagine what people would have thought when you kind of said, we're going to dig under the city?
Oh, you're going to tap into the lava and it will blow out everywhere.
And we're going to connect places underground.
Yeah.
And back then there was no lighting and there was no electricity for it to run. It was all steam powered.
Yeah. They were so creative, weren't they?
Yes.
For the knowledge and technology they had at the time.
Yeah. So when we talk about it as being one of the great wonders of the world, it truly is. And they talk about the fact that Londoners really poo-poo the whole thing and find it, you know, a dreadful way of getting around the city. And it's congested and it's smelly and it's dirty.
But
and
could
it
you
needs
imagine?
An upgrade.
Could you? Because we've both been on the Underground.
Yes.
Could you imagine if that didn't exist and it was all buses and trains above ground and taxis or cabs, as they call them there, and cars?
Yeah.
It's
well,
crazy
it's
as it
already
is.
Chaos. Yes, it's already chaos.
Remember when we were there in 2019, we were driving through London and all of a sudden we found ourselves in the middle of London and there was people that would just suddenly pull U-turns in front of you and cross across the lanes in front. It was like, wow, this is insane.
Yes. Yeah. Crazy. So let's look at some of the history here before you go into the stories. And I won't go through too much because, as you can imagine, with a build like this, it isn't completed at one time. It is added on to. And so there is a long timeline associated with the London Underground. But in 1850s, Victorian London was not a pleasant place, especially for a traveller. And Gustave Doré recorded the hideous congestion This is in the 1850s, as pedestrians, horsemen and horse-drawn vehicles jostled for space in its overcrowded streets. But the worst thing of all was the predominant smell of horse poo.
Oh, see, I don't mind that smell because I love horses.
Can you imagine the ladies in their long dresses and their beautiful leather boots trying to cross the street when it's dry, not when it's wet or when there's sludge and snow melting and everything and horse poo everywhere? Oh, my goodness.
I can't even... Some human excrement out there as well. They chuck their chamber pots out.
Yes. So, as I said, the predominant smell was horse poo with thousands of flies being attracted to such.
Oh, that's just Australia on a regular day.
Now, there were actually, and I've got to get off the topic of horse poo. I seem to be stuck on it. There were jobs specifically for people that went along and collected that stuff.
Oh, see, it provided an income for someone. Look at the positive.
Imagine saying to someone on the dole right now, your job is going to go out and collect horse poo on the streets.
Oh, yeah, no. That's not going to happen.
No way.
We've got way too many princesses out there who would say that's beneath them.
It's my right not to accept that.
And I refuse to go and pick up horse poo.
You're impinging on my freedoms as a human being.
But please give me my free chick.
At the end of the 19th century, the invention of the internal combustion engine was greeted with a solution to air pollution. So in 1815, in an attempt to improve the London traffic issues, more people started to use the Thames River. So this is in 1815. This is prior to the underground being built.
So they're putting the horse poo in the Thames River?
No. They thought,
Just
get off the horse
poo. I'm stuck in horse poo.
The streets are overcrowded. Right. There's traffic everywhere. So they go, okay, let's see if we can float up and down the river.
Let's do a Huckleberry.
We've got a river here.
Huckleberry Flynn and we'll pole down the river.
Yeah, let's use that. So a steamboat service was begun between Greenwich and the city, and they had departures every 15 minutes. And in the following 12 years, four new toll bridges were built across the river.
Of course, they found a way to make some money.
Yep.
I suppose they've got to pay for the bridges, so fair enough.
And they charged half a penny or more to cross. However, by the 1850s, river transport offered no relief. Since the Thames was the receptacle for London's sewage.
Horse poo!
And also its drinking water. Yum, yum.
Oh, nice.
Very nice.
Doesn't like getting a bit of fibre with your water?
Jeez. So pedestrians crossing its bridges during the hot summer, which, look, wouldn't be too many days of that, but, you know.
It's not hot. Come to Australia.
Oh, it is now. It is now.
Yeah, that's because of climate change that doesn't exist. Yeah. Oh, I made you lose your place. Sorry about that.
Yeah, pedestrians crossing its bridges during the hot summer days did so at a steady jogging pace with handkerchiefs over their noses.
Was that with lavender on it?
Oh, yes, most probably. And in July 1855, the great scientist Michael Faraday travelled by boat from London Bridge to Hungerford Bridge and recorded that the whole of the river was an opaque, pale brown fluid.
Oh, yuck!
Near the bridges, the odour was so thick you could carve it. And it rolled up in clouds so dense that they were visible at the surface.
No. Oh, no.
3 years later, in the heat of the summer in 1858, the stench was so appalling that the members of Parliament had to flee the chambers.
Oh, because that's on the river.
Mm-hmm, and the Times magazine called it the Great Stink. Welcome to London. So the solution to London's problems of congestion and filth required an unorthodox solution by someone who could see outside the constraints of the times.
Mm. Now, you were talking about how they went underground. Do you remember the furor or the crazy thoughts people had when they said they were going to put a tunnel under the harbour bridge?
Yes.
And underneath the harbour? People were freaking out.
Yep, yep.
They did it.
They did it.
It leaks, but it's there.
Mm-hmm. Engineers worked with new materials, new machinery and new techniques and built the world's first underground railways and the first tunnel beneath a river.
Mm-hmm.
They were initially condemned by the press and their ideas were looked at as idiotic. and no one had ever attempted anything like that before. So it wasn't going to work.
Yeah, of course it's not going to work.
Sir Edward Watkin, the egotistical chairman of the Metropolitan Line.
Oh, I like him already.
The world's first underground railway, attempted to make it part of a system running from Manchester to Paris via a channel tunnel.
Ooh, a tunnel.
Which he actually started to build until Parliament, of which he was a member, stopped him.
Oh, they're not visionaries.
So that was like a lot earlier than when the Channel Tunnel was actually done. Wow. Whitaker Wright raised the money to start the build at Bakerloo Line, but went bankrupt, and he was jailed for 7 years for fraud and committed suicide in the hallowed precincts of the new law courts in the Strand. So he just went and stood there and went, stuff his all, and killed himself. Wow. So his successor was Charles Tyson Yerkes, an American financier who had been jailed for fraud in Philadelphia and confronted by an angry mob brandishing nooses and firearms in Chicago. And so he fled to London. And having raised the money to build three tube lines, the legality of which was debatable, he died, leaving his organisation on the verge of bankruptcy. Mm. So for most of its existence, the network has struggled to gain investment. Yeah, and it is still, at this point in time, struggling to gain investment so that it can be
renovated. Imagine the amount of upkeep that it takes.
The number of tunnels and stations that over the years have not been used or weren't thought out maybe too well.
Yeah.
So in the 20th century, the London Underground served as a refuge from German bombs, as the biggest art gallery in the world, as a symbol of London itself through its famous route map, and as a political football.
I think you say that as route. We don't want a route map around London. Thank you very much. Can we have a route?
Okay, route. Route map.
I follow
a route.
I bet
route.
You do. She'll follow a route anywhere, this one.
There's a route, and I follow it. Okay. This route. God.
I know what you mean. You can be said either way. It's just, it sounded quite funny in the way you said it.
So in the years between the two world wars, London's underground railway was the envy of other nations. And in the post-war period, it has struggled to cope with London's ever-growing passenger traffic despite chronic underinvestment. Though its connection to Heathrow, the world's busiest airport, has more than fulfilled Sir Edward Watkin's dream of making it a link in an international transport system. A journey begun on the London Underground can literally lead to anywhere in the world. Truly, it is an underground to everywhere. And we have travelled, or I have travelled from Heathrow into London using the Underground.
Me too.
And we had to take these enormous bags that had
Were they empty bags?
Well,
at that stage?
No, they were slightly empty. I think we bought things to give away as gifts. Yep. So there were things in it.
But so if you ever see Renata in England, London, somewhere like that, hit her up for a gift because she apparently brings bag loads of them.
But they were, you know, you get the largest bags that you possibly can.
Yeah. And were these before the wheels? You know how
No. They're not that far back. No, no.
Remember
they
the ones
wheels?
You had to carry
they
by handles? So it was hell.
But we get into our accommodation, or where our accommodation is, and get off at the closest
tube stop.
And then as we get off and we look and we go, far out. There's so many stairs to the top.
No escalator. It must have been before they were invented.
Shut up. No, they were invented. They just weren't here. This place wasn't that important. And we had to climb up with those bags.
This is with your other travel buddy, isn't it?
Hi, Gail. And no one helped. No one gave a helping hand or a second look at two ladies trying to drag their crap up these stairs.
They'll probably thinking they'll learn next time, won't they?
They won't do this another time. Yes, the joys of travelling. So I've got a couple of fun facts about the London Tube. And the fact, number one fact, is that no one calls it the London Underground. They do call it the Tube.
The Tube.
Mm-hmm. Now,
or the Tube.
The Tube.
It'd be in America. Tube.
So when the first ever underground railway system, and like I said, it was steam operated, pulled out of Paddington Station.
Paddington.
It only went down a passage of 3.5 miles. And
that's a fair long way. That's six or seven kilometres
This is back in 1863. So this is a huge monumental thing.
Yeah.
Approximately 40,000 people lined up for the ghost train. It would have been like the ghost train.
Yeah.
40,000 people lined up to have a crack at it.
Wow.
So within 6 months, 26,000 people were riding the train each day.
They must have been cramming them in like sardines.
26,000 each day.
That's
mind-blowing. In the 1860s. That's crazy. By 1884, there were more than 800 trains in operation in what was called the Inner Circle. So a circular line that enclosed central London and is now just the Circle Line. The majority of the London Underground isn't underground. The entire London Underground network is approximately 249 miles long, employing more than 4,100 trains and linking 270 stations, but only about 45% of these miles are underground. Now, each train travels 114,000 miles a year.
Ooh.
Or 4.6 times around the world.
Oh, wow. Each train. Ooh, they're big numbers.
There are more than a billion journeys made each year. And 500,000 mice call the underground home.
Oh, lucky mice. Renata's trying to vomit.
Don't you
like mice?
Yeah, over there.
I used to breed them. Mm. I loved mice. Did you? Yeah, they'd crawl all over me and...
So, as you're going to talk about, there are ghosts reportedly living down there. There are also groups of subterranean Londoners.
Mm-hmm.
So, some of them are called the Mole People.
Oh.
Oh, no, just like the Mole People of New York Subway. Sorry. Right. So, there are people who live in the underground. And
because there are so many disused stations and places mm-hmm. that they could hide out.
So... we've got the Faceless Woman of Beacon's Tree Station, the Toothy Man of Channelsea Depot, and the Screaming Spectre of Farrington Station. There's just a few of the ghosts.
But you are treading in my territory,
I'm not saying anymore.
No,
I'm not
you
saying
don't,
anymore.
Don't.
The average Londoner spends 11.5 days each year in the tube. The first escalator was a miserable failure. That must have been at the station we arrived at. The longest escalator is nearly 200 feet long.
They're crazy. Wow. I remember going, I can't remember which station it was, and you go up to the top of it and then you look down and you actually catch your breath.
I know.
Because it's just so steep and goes down so far.
Yes, and you must stand on the left.
Yeah.
Because all hell breaks loose if you don't.
In Australia, you got to stand on the right. So it's really confusing. And that might not be the first escalator going down, or travelator, I think they call them in America. Sometimes that's the first one, and then it goes down further.
Yes. Yeah. So among the strangest things left on the underground and collected by Lost Property Office was a jar of bull semen.
What?
an outboard motor. Three dead bats in a container.
Oh.
A vasectomy kit.
What?
A harpoon gun, which may have gone with the 14-foot-long boat. A stuffed eagle. Breast implants. False teeth. And a surprising number of prosthetic limbs. A 4-foot Mickey Mouse. A six full-sized mannequins and an urn containing a dead man's ashes.
Oh, no.
Which was
lost grandma.
Reunited with his brother 5 years later after being lost. Isn't that amazing?
Hang on. There's a vasectomy kit?
A vasectomy kit.
Is that just one of those Stanley knives that you just grab it and whip it out?
Didn't you talk on another show elsewhere about some guy who did vasectomies?
That was an Australian who he was an electrician.
Yeah,
he's from up Queensland, and he decided he could make some money on the side.
He
wasn't making money on the side. He actually put it onto a Unique website. Can you believe there is such a thing as a Unique website? And offered free vasectomies for whoever wanted them. Of course, he had no training whatsoever apart from a first aid certificate. He did have that, but apparently on the two men volunteered. Quite happy to have the job done. The second one, he couldn't stop the bleeding, so they had to call the ambulance. And that's how he got caught.
Mm.
Oh, my heavens.
Now, as you mentioned, with the air raids, the tube tunnels and station platforms were used as air raid shelters. And that horrible story that you read, that terrifying and heart-wrenching story that you read in the Soundscape, it was from this time in September, during the war, in the 1939-1940 period. And more than 22,000 bunk beds were installed in stations across the system to provide places for people to sleep. And we've all seen those black and white images of people running down into the tube.
Yeah. And recreated in movies and things like that. Yeah.
Just so.
But the Bethnal Green story is just devastating.
Yeah. Yeah. And the iconic map that we see.
Oh, yes.
Is actually designed. It was designed by Harry Beck in 1933. And he was an engineering draftsman. And he designed it and was inspired by electronic circuit boards.
Oh, I can see that actually. Now you say it.
Yeah. And he was paid less than $15 for his work.
Yeah, look, trying to wrap your head around how to map that out, because, I mean, physicality-wise, it does not match the locations, but
no.
It nicely matches the line, so you can work out which colour line you're meant to be on and which station matches up with that. Only an engineer, because my husband's an engineer, only an engineer could work that out in their head.
Yes, that's, absolutely. That could have a vision of that.
Yep.
But I'm going to finish there because we're here about the ghost stories, and that gives everyone a bit of an insight to the complexities about the London Underground. And hopefully, if you've never been, if you are in London, it is something that is a must do.
It is a must do.
My favorite spring cleaning takeaway is the post-clean clarity that you get. That, wow. How have I been living like this feeling? It's kind of like when you find out that you've been paying a fortune for wireless when Mint Mobile has phone plans for just $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan. Wow! How have I been affording this? It's time to switch to Mint Mobile and get unlimited talk, text, and data for $15 a month. The quality that I've received from Mint Mobile is second to none, and I've tried them all. And this is an amazing company to work with that actually cares about their clients and the prices that they charge. So if you're on that fence wondering, should I make the shift? You're going to get great coverage, you're going to get great customer service, and all of the bells and whistles you expect from the bigger brand names. Say bye-bye to your overpriced wireless plans and their jaw-dropping monthly bills and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to rescue you with premium wireless plans starting at just $15 a month. So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/P60. That's mintmobile.com/P60. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/P60. $45 upfront payment required, equivalent to just $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details. Okay, my little darklings, I know, just by looking at me, you think, that guy does not work out. Well, you'd be right. And aside from just looking at me and knowing I don't work out, I was quickly reminded of the fact that I don't work out because I've got subscriptions to not one, not two, but three different apps to help me maintain my weight and get in shape and feel better. Three apps that I worked diligently when I first signed up for them for about a week and then forgot all about them. But thankfully, Rocket Money didn't forget about them. I'd forgotten all about three, not one, not two, but three different subscriptions to three different organizations. And here I am, still dumb, still fat, and losing money every month without even paying attention to it. I think some of you out there might understand the predicament I'm in, and that's why you need to get Rocket Money. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending, and it helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over all of my subscriptions and a clear view of exactly where my money is going. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved now a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/P60. That's rocketmoney.com/P60. rocketmoney.com/P60.
When I suggested this topic, I had no idea there was that many ghost stories.
There's hundreds.
There is. So, look, I've had to just I'll probably pick out the most famous ones. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'll go through a few of them so we can have a look at them and have a little bit of a discussion. So the first one we're heading to is Covent Garden. Now, mm-hmm. We've been there.
Yes, we have.
Last time we were there, we stood up the top and looked down below where all the nice people were eating, and they had a string quartet playing fabulous music. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And was there
yes.
singers as well?
Yes. No, they were playing amazing.
They were just phenomenal.
Amazing music. Yeah.
Oh, memories, Renata. We'll be back in 5 months. So, Covent Garden. Since the first doors opened at the station, there have been stories of a tall man in a hat.
Oh, the hat man. Here
and
we
a
go.
Cloak.
Ow, yes.
Wandering the corridors after dark. It has terrified some tube workers so much that they've requested to move to a less haunted underground station. And who can blame them, really? So this charming character is reportedly to be the actor William Therese, who was murdered in 1897. Before his untimely demise, he used to frequent the bakery that once stood on the site of Covent Garden Station and now likes to wander the corridors instead.
Mm.
Apparently he wants to avenge his death or is simply a bit annoyed or angry at what had happened to him. So his apparition, according to this article, makes a chilling sight.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds a little bit like the dude from My Fair Lady, Rex Harrison, with his top hat and cape. Mm. He's looking for Liza underneath the tall pillars. It's that area, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes,
yes, it is. She's selling her flowers. Now we're going to move to Farringdon.
Farringdon.
So on this one, they say that when it's quiet, you can hear blood-curdling screams around this station. They echo up and down the corridors. And apparently it happens that often throughout the years that it's not fading, because sometimes hauntings will fade,
mm-hmm.
but it just keeps happening and happening, and so many people have actually witnessed it. Now, they're saying it. These screams are not caused by the delays on the Hammersmith and City Line.
Mm-hmm. Where's my train?
It's supposed to be the work of a lady called Anne, with an E, like mm-hmm. myself, Naylor. Now, she was an apprentice hat maker who was murdered by her employer in 1758.
Wow, that's been hanging around a long time.
That's right. That's 2.5 centuries. So why did she choose to haunt Farringdon? Why has she chosen that particular spot to haunt? Apparently that is where her body was unceremoniously dumped back then.
Ah, right.
So she would be a resident of Place.
Mm-hmm.
To her, there is no train station there, or she is aware of it, and that's why she's screaming. But she is still there screaming to this day.
Oh, wow.
I think we're going to have to go visit some of these ones. Now we go to Liverpool Street.
Mm-hmm.
So the staff at Liverpool Station are quite used to having this weird stuff go down. Many workers have spotted strange figures on the CCTV system in the dead of the night, and passengers have reported seeing a man in overalls pacing up and down the platforms. I mean, that could be a real person.
Mm-hmm.
Because there'd be workers.
Mm-hmm.
The station was rumoured to be built on a mass burial site.
Oh, yes, that's the one on the plague pit.
Yes, which, you know, it sounds like a typical ghost story, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Oh, it was built on a plague pit or built on a burial ground. And mm-hmm. we've actually come across this many times mm-hmm. in our true hauntings.
Mm-hmm.
But it's actually true, because when they were digging around there in 2015, they found the plague pit with over 3,000 skeletons.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. So I wonder if that's the ones that are showing up on the camera, or is it an orb? We love orbs, don't we?
Oh, so much.
So much. Not. Right, now we're going to head to Bank Station.
Mm-hmm.
Since the 19th century, they've been seeing a sinister figure in black stalking the passages.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a putrid smell wafting.
It's everywhere.
It's wafting. It's putrid smell.
Yeah.
Somebody farted. And they also have a pervading sense of sadness. I think I'd be sad if I was left to haunt with that smell.
Oh, poor ghost.
Apparently, the smell can be explained, though. It's built on top of a mass grave.
Oh, dear. No, nothing to do with the Indian curry down the road. Nothing at all.
There is, and apparently, this sinister figure is known as the Black Nun. She's said to walk the tunnels and mourn her executed brother who worked at the old bank, which gave the station its name. I actually remember reading somewhere that there was a figure who was called the Black Nun. I don't know if it's the same station. I was so overwhelmed with information. And the reason why she appears like that is because when she was alive, it was the smell. As you were talking about the smells,
mm-hmm.
she was trying to cover herself up so she didn't smell the smells. Mm-hmm. I don't know how she died, but that's why they call her the Black Nun. Now, how's this for a name of a station? Elephant and Castle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. They say with this one, if you're afraid of the supernatural, suggest that you avoid the Bakerloo line, because mm-hmm. the Bakerloo line's quite active.
Mm-hmm.
So this Elephant and Castle makes the top of the list on the Bakerloo line. The station's no stranger to odd tapping noises, footsteps made by invisible people, and doors being thrown open without warning. The most chilling tale has to be that of a young woman who is seen boarding the train but never leaves them.
Oh.
But is she one of the people that lives in the tube, and maybe she's using that to get off the train? But I can't imagine that would be an easy feat to open up a back door and jump out. Unlike the others on the list, there is no suggested explanations for the ghostly woman and her everlasting Oyster card.
Oh.
I gather that's what they call the underground card?
Yeah.
An oyster card?
An oyster card. Don't know. Don't ask me.
Don't be licking that card, Renata.
Don't ask me.
I know how much you love seafood.
No.
All right, now we're going to move on to the British Museum, Holborn. All right, so no trains have been through the abandoned British Museum station in over 80 years.
Wow.
You would think that at the British Museum that would be a good spot to have a train stop. However, they've got a nasty ghost there. Malevolent. Well, don't we like that? And they reside there, and they are one of the most terrifying hauntings of the underground. Many people believe the long-abandoned British Museum tunnels are haunted by the ghost of the Egyptian god Amun-Ra.
Yes, that's who we mentioned right at the very beginning.
Oh, I thought you said it was a female.
It is a female.
Oh, okay.
I think.
That's all right. We'll just keep going. Apparently he's no Casper the Friendly Ghost.
Okay, it's a he.
Oh, I think Amun-Ra is a fellow, if I remember my studies watching the movie.
Oh, well, yes, of course, because, no, that's true. I'm conflicted.
Isn't he the one with the Book of the Dead?
Because he appears only in a loincloth and a headdress. Headdress threw me off.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking when you were reading that ad. I'm thinking, hang on, does that mean that this chick's topless down there? That'd be people flocking to get down and have a look at that one.
It's clear now. It's clarified. Thank you.
That's okay. She's had a rough start to the True Hauntings podcast today. We weren't in a good mood, but we've got the wheeze happening, so she's happier now. Aren't you, Renata?
Yes.
Either that, she fakes it well. I'll check with her husband. Anyway, so we're going to get in trouble. People have blamed this Amun-Ra for the disappearance of two women from the neighbouring Holborn station in 1935. The rumour goes that there's a secret tunnel connecting the Egyptian room at the British Museum to Holborn. Don't know about that. Logic suggests that the ghost of Amun-Ra has been using this tunnel to travel to Holborn and snatch tube passages to take back to his lair. Do you know what that sounds like to me? That sounds like a serial killer who's using the underground, dressing up in a loincloth and a headdress and running around and nabbing women.
Don't give people that idea. Take that back.
I think it's too late. I think it's out in the ether. I think it's gone to the radio waves. All right, so we've got a few more stations to go. King's Cross. So that's where Harry Potter leaves from, isn't it? King's Cross Station, 9 3/4.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know, do you?
No.
Have you never read Harry Potter?
I've seen the movies, okay?
No,
I've
that
seen
is
the movies.
Not good enough. Not only have you not watched Supernatural, the TV series, you have not read Harry Potter.
Oh, no, forgive me. Forgive me, I haven't read Harry Potter.
You have just dropped so much in my eyes, Renata.
I'm sorry.
All right, let's get back to King's Cross, because apparently King's Cross, St. Pancras, had a huge tragedy that occurred there in 1987, where a total of 31 people were killed and more than 100 injured. So the following year, a woman reported seeing a distressed woman and going to help her, but instead she passed straight through her. So an apparition. So this makes me wonder if this is like a crisis apparition that is imprinted on the location.
Mm-hmm.
The woman is described as being dressed in modern clothes and is said to scream loudly and have her arms outstretched. There's been quite a few sightings of her since 1987.
She might be one of those ones that is looking for their child.
Ooh, I've just got goosebumps all over me. I've got the hackles have gone up on me. Oh. So now we're going to South Kensington.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where the palace is, Kensington?
Mm-hmm.
Around that area? So imagine this, right? You're standing there alone. You're waiting for the last train of the day. Another train pulls in and after a silence, there's the sharp whistle of the train. A ghost-like figure in a peaked hat and cloak clings to the side of this train as it pulls in. So they're on the outside of the train. The train then disappears into the tunnels. The only problem is that it should never have existed according to the records dating back to the ghost train's first sighting in 1928. So this is a whole train.
This is a ghost train.
It is a ghost train with somebody clinging to the outside.
Wow.
And there's been quite a few people, again, who have seen this and reported, according to this article, as recently as 2013.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Is it possible that they think they're in on a particular platform but they're not?
I don't know. Because I remember we were talking to a lady who was at the Picton Tunnels, and that used to be a train tunnel. And she said that while she was in there, she heard the blow of the whistle,
mm-hmm.
and then she heard the train coming towards her, and it was getting louder and louder, and they both ran for their lives because mm-hmm. they thought they were about to be run over by a ghost train. And what we got the maps out, and we had a look at the maps, and we found where the train line sits now compared to where this tunnel was. And what it would have been is the train coming around the bend outside, mm-hmm. that noise would have then been amplified down the tunnel. And as mm-hmm. the train's getting closer on the outside line, it made it sound like it was coming through the tunnel.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
But she was adamant. I mean, she was there at the time. I wasn't. I mean, just trying to give a logical explanation to what's happened. But she was adamant that that was a ghost train and it was going to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
As you do. All right, we're almost there. So I'm now at Highgate.
Mm-hmm. Love Highgate.
Oh, we have so much fond memories of Highgate. There are some beautiful, beautiful headstones and tributes in there to people. There's a grand piano mm-hmm. in marble that's in there. That was like, ooh. Mm-hmm. And
it's a cemetery.
It's a cemetery, sorry. Yes. And it's some of the older sections where the headstones have got the green moss on them and there's vines all over them and they're jammed packed in so tightly together. It's eerily beautiful.
It is.
We might pop some of our photos up of Highgate Cemetery mm-hmm. when this episode comes out, show people what it's all about. So you might think that this has something to do with the infamous cemetery or its use as an air raid shelter during the war. In fact, it's got something more to do with the mid-century Northern Line Extension Program. So this is a stretch of track on the North London, around the North London station, that is unused, and the platform decommissioned, and the tracks were taken away. People have reported the sounds of a train coming down the no longer existent stretch of track ever since. So once again, is it this sound being displaced, and people assuming it's coming from that, and they think it's a train or not? I don't know. All right, now we're up to the Aldgate, is that how we say it? Aldgate Station. So this is another one that was a plague pit.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably in Britain they had so many people dying, and sadly it's happening again with this this plague. And it is. It's another plague, really. Mm-hmm. They've got to find somewhere for the bodies to go. So quite often you couldn't dig anywhere without finding body somewhere. But that's anyway, there are so many sightings here. The station has a ghost log book.
Oh, wow.
Dedicated to supernatural stories that people have witnessed at the station. Wouldn't you love to
that's
see
cool.
that?
That's cool.
That reminds me of Edinburgh, the Greyfriars.
Mm-hmm.
They've got a book there where people have also written all their experiences in. The most famous ghost there is an elderly ghost who may have even saved a life. A worker was reported to have fallen from a height onto the live electrical rail at the station and survived. Witnesses say there was a ghostly figure stroking him on the ground as he lay injured. She's been dubbed the ghostly angel or the elderly angel ever since.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the sources today come from mylondon.news and Secret LDN, which is, of course, short for London.com, Londonist.com, and also that book that I mentioned earlier. But there's also many more articles that I've read and just skimmed over them. But it's truly astounding. Now, there is a map. Now, you know how you've got the tube map?
Yes.
There is a haunted tube map.
Right.
And you can find out what ghosts are at what station.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's fabulous for us. We can check that out. But it's also going to pre-program your brain for what to expect when you get there instead of just being open to any experience. There was one thing that I found when I was going through all of this.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a job. One of the jobs that people had was called the Fluffers. Have you heard of the Fluffers?
No, I have not heard of the Fluffers. What do Fluffers do?
Oh, this is fabulous. So up until about the 1970s, I think it was, these people used to go underground into the tunnels to collect the dust, particularly human hair and skin cells that are shed by 3 million daily passengers, and get it off the lines, because otherwise it would just build up as fluff on the sides of the track.
Wow.
So their job was to actually go in and clean this stuff out. But they got replaced by the tunnel cleaning train, which now goes through and cleans all the debris out. But who would have even thought of that as a problem?
Yeah.
We forget that we shed.
We do.
Some more than others. You and your hair.
But look, some people, and this is interesting because some people, and we've had photographs where they send particular light anomalies to us and they go, it's spirit. Mm. And we say it's probably dust. And they say, no, there's no dust in my house.
No. No, we don't shed skin cells or have dandruff.
No dust in my house.
Fluff off our clothes.
Mm.
And normally those ones, you can see that there is chaos and junk everywhere around the house. And they're going, there's no dust in my house. We go, maybe not. Look, I'm going to come up with a couple of possibilities to explain why some people think that things are haunted there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, one of them, and you were talking about this earlier today, was the infrasound.
Infrasound.
And this came from a paper called Ghosts of the Machine from the Society for Psychical Research. They've cited infrasound as the cause of apparitions seen by staff at a so-called haunted laboratory in Warwick. So that's the experiment that they had done to show that by playing this infrasound, it stimulated part of the brain to hallucinate. So the infrasound within the tube stations would be from the escalators, the motors in the escalators, the moving trains, the wind that is produced, because that when the, remember when the tube is coming in, you get that rush of air before the train gets in, because the train's pushing the air ahead of itself before it gets to the station. And you, and my hair went up everywhere. I can imagine you'd look like Cousin It if your hair was out.
That's right.
Renata's hair is so long at the moment. And also distorted sounds, particularly because there's levels. There's trains on top of trains in the various tunnels there. And that all creates this infrasound, which then could cause you, if you were
susceptible to it.
To hallucinate and maybe see these things. So I thought that was an interesting thing. Another thing is like when there's a bit of an earthquake. Now, I've actually experienced that where I had my ears went funny and I felt really weird. And when I was in LA and I've gone, oh, I just feel like my head's gone really fuzzy. I feel really odd. And then everything started to shake. So I was experiencing that infrasound before everything started to shake, rattle and roll. So it really does create that noise, that problem. And the other thing is there are so many stations, there are so many people, noise echoes, it's all tiled. And you just don't know where the noise source is coming from sometimes when you hear those noises.
That's true.
But in saying all of that, knowing the history of London and the trauma that has happened in many of those locations, would you say that the London Underground is a true haunting?
Absolutely.
Me too. I reckon just you've got the electricity, so you'd have high EMF fields and you'd have this infrasound happening. And I think it's a very big, strong possibility that there would be ghosts down there.
Mm. And the number of people coming on board during each day.
And they bring their own ghosts with them.
Who are bringing their own ghosts with them. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So definitely a place for exploration, I think.
Yeah. Now, guys, that brings us to the end of this week's episode of True Hauntings. We have had some people ask us, do we have a Patreon page? And we sure do. If you look up Anne and Renata, you can join our Patreon community. We have various entry levels, but I strongly advise heading over and joining the Grand Pooh Bars, because that gets you onto a private page where the gossip comes out, and we'll have some little extra videos and things that we are hoping to put up in regards to True Hauntings. So if you'd like to join us there, we'd love to have you. But thank you so much for joining us on this week's episode of True Hauntings. Make sure you share it around. Make sure you've subscribed to it. If you can leave us a review on iTunes, we would so appreciate it. Let's build this little channel up to be awesome. Thank you for joining us. And guess what, Renata?
We'll see you next week. And we'll also see you on the Dark Side.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of True Hauntings. If you like the show, give us a 5-star rating and leave a review. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening right now. For more on Anne and Renata, follow @AnneAndRenata on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube.